Hola mi gente, this is Gonzalo Peña and welcome back to Idea Tellers. We are back with impact layers, author, researcher, and thought leader, Liz Wiseman. Enjoy.
And so the book is written to all of us who don't want to just clock into a job. Like, yeah, okay, we want to be paid and we want, you know, to be treated fairly, but we want to do work that matters.
Absolutely.
And we want power. You know, power is one of these words that I think gets a bad rap. Like, oh, power. We're not going to talk about power. We're going to pretend power doesn't exist. Power is bad. It's the same way with the word control. Ooh, you know, being controlling is bad. Actually, you know, we're wired to want to have control over ourselves. Like, where it becomes bad is when we try to exert control over other people. We're trying to usurp their personal control and take it for ourselves. But people want to show up at work and know that I'm not like an instrument of my boss. I have my own power and say and influence and independence and agency. It's kind of built into us. And I think people want to be powerful, and we need people to be powerful inside organizations. I don't want anyone on my team who doesn't feel like they have any power.
Yeah.
They're no fun to work with. Like, once someone's decided, like, I don't know, whatever.
Yes.
Like, sometimes my husband will get in that like mode with me, which is like, Liz, just do whatever. Like, give me a honey to do list. Like, tell me what to do. I'm like, oh, I'm not taking that bait. Like, not good with someone like, let's go of their power.
There you go.
To do.
I love it. They're like, please be a contributor. I don't
know. Yeah. Please be like a powerful partner.
I love that. You know, a partner, not a subservient, but actually let's work together towards a greater goal. I love it.
I think I spend a lot of time with senior leaders and senior executives and I've developed a lot of empathy for how hard that job is. Yeah, I'm also the founder and like owner, proprietor of a company as well. And, you know, one of the things that's a lonely job, and one of the things that's lonely about this job, and yeah, I think everyone knows this, like you just watch a movie about the king and everyone else or what it's like to be queen. It's kind of lonely because people don't tell you the truth. And your power that you have in these roles causes people to do some weird things. And what you really want is like, I really want a team that will speak truth. That I want people who have power, not just show obedience to power.
I like that. And someone who's empowered enough to make the wise decisions, so to have the vision to see what's best for everyone and not just for me. You know? I thank you for saying that. Liz, I'm fascinated by space exploration and NASA, and one of the people that you interviewed is Mary the Mission Slayer in the chapter Finish Stronger. And can you tell us a little bit more about her and the way that she added value versus just being part of the team, you know?
Oh, this idea of this Mission Slayer in Mary, there were several NASA examples that illustrated the same principle. Mary, you know, Mary the Mission Slayer was one of them. There's a term in NASA called fire and forget.
Uh-huh.
And you might think, oh, that's about fire someone and forget that they exist. But that's not what that's about. Fire and forget is the term they use for, I can fire off a request to someone.
Okay.
Hey, Mary, can you like, you know, take care of this and make sure that we fix this issue? And I can forget about it because I know that person has got it. And we all know, like, you know, think of the people who you work with where you kind of fire off a request and you have to then keep that request on your to-do list. Like, I got to make sure they do that, they received it, that they read the note, that they're going to do it, that they didn't forget, that I follow up, that they got that not mostly across the finish line, they got it all the way across the finish line. And you think about the burden that creates for the leader. Like,
yes.
If I can't count on them to get it done 100%, then I can I 100% of the time have to remember it myself, because this might be the one time they forget.
Yes.
Versus the person who, it's like a no-look pass person, which is like, I know that if I don't even look, if I pass the ball to them, they will be in position. And I know I can hand the ball to them and they're going to get it done. Like everything within their power. And then with those folks, it's a, like a fire and forget. They're going to slay.
Yes.
I'm going to give it to them. And I know it is as good as done and will be done in the right way. And I think that's sort of the essence of that practice. It's, I called it finish stronger, where it's when there are problems that arise, and any mission will have problems, mm-hmm. You know, when things get really tough, like what average contributors or solid contributors do is they take ownership, but when they get tough, they escalate up and they hand off the problems to higher ups. Whereas the impact players, they just hold on to it. They have a completion gene. They get it done. And they don't get it done alone. Like, okay, let me bear the sole burden of this. But they just hold on to the ownership to make sure it crosses the finish line.
Love it. No, and this, speaking of crossing the finish line, can you describe for us the acronym WIN, W-I-N, that you touched on in the book, please?
Yeah, it's potentially one of these cheesy little acronyms. Lauren Hancock, who's our data scientist and kind of like my auxiliary brain, she's wonderful. She's like, listen, normally I don't like these little acronyms, but this WIN one is so good and we need to keep it. But it's just this little term I use for WIN is what's important now. And the most influential people are constantly like figuring out what the WIN is, meaning what's important to this organization? What's important to my boss? What is she thinking about? What is she asking about? Like, there may be this list of priorities, but I can see that she's bothered by this. I can see that she's constantly asking about this. Like, that's actually really important. And so it's figuring out what's important to a person, and what's important now at this point in time. And I don't mean like seems urgent in this little moment, but like in this larger moment in time, what's important? And once we understand the WIN, then we know where to channel our efforts.
I love it. And so it takes a lot of vision, even if we think that we are low on the totem pole, it takes vision to see what are the priorities, what needs to get done. Would that be accurate?
Well, you know, I'm sort of at the point in my career and my life that I'm able to distinguish between, like, there's usually a hard way to do things and an easier way to do things. Like, the harder way to do this would be probably how I do it, which is like to pay attention to things. So I'm a noticer. Like, I'll go into a meeting and I'll notice, oh, we had an agenda of topics, but we didn't talk about the agenda. There was like a different agenda of what was really important, and I'm paying attention to that. Or, yeah, we've got our company priorities written down, but I see us spending a lot of time on this. That's probably what's really important. So you can do that and sort of intuit it or divine those kinds of things. There's an easier way to do it, is to just talk to your boss. Like, you know what? What's important to you right now? Like, what is top of mind for you? Like, if I were to be channeling my energy to where it would be most valuable for you, like, what things would I be working on?
Okay.
Or there's an example in the book, Evan Hong at Target, who he would ask his boss, he was like a senior director in the finance organization. He would say, what is your boss asking you about in one-on-one meetings? That's a pretty smart question.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. It says a lot, which is like, I'm thinking about what it's like to be you and what pressure is coming down on you, because then I want to work on things that are going to help relieve that pressure and help you do your job for that person.
Yes. Wow. And it's brilliant, to be honest. You play with the dichotomy of stepping up versus stepping back, or when it does that have to do with instead of trying to guess, actually asking? Or does it have to do with the talent you have to identify the multipliers in the organization. How would you say that the dynamics plays?
Yeah.
So the term I use, step up, step back, is what I saw the most impactful contributors were doing. They weren't afraid of stepping into a leadership vacuum. And by leadership vacuum, I mean when you're in an ambiguous situation and there's collaboration happening, but you're not really sure who's in charge.
Okay.
Like, okay, we're all here in this meeting, but I don't really know who's in charge. Or we're like working on this project together, but there's no clear boss. You know, some people just kind of muddle through that. Other people are like, okay, could someone please tell me who the boss is? But we find that the most impactful contributors, they quickly step in and fill that leadership void. Like, okay, we're a little bit leaderless. Let me step in and offer leadership. But they're not, and they don't insist on always being the leader. So it's not like, hey, I'm the boss and I will lead all of those meetings or conversations. Is they step in and lead assertively and gracefully, but then they as willingly and gracefully step back and follow other people's leadership. And, you know, I'm part of a lay church where people serve in like callings and voluntary organizations, and you'll have people like appointed as the leader for that, but it's not like a career assignment. Like, okay, you're always gonna be the youth minister or you're always gonna have this job. It's like you're gonna serve for a time. And when your term of service is over, you step back and you support somebody else's leadership. And I think we see that in organizations, and what the impact players do is they serve aggressively as a leader, but then they step back and follow others with the same degree of, I don't know, energy and engagement.
Wow. That is a powerful concept, because it's not a matter of just taking over and taking over. I keep doing that. It's, you know, and you use the adverb gracefully, which is not very popular, but it says a lot. You know, within the organization, you need to have that soft skill to make things happen, you know, to know when to, you know, take the leadership, but also know when to allow other people to develop their own leadership skills. So.
It's not just about following and being sort of thoughtful and graceful. It's when leaders are able to step up, like we need them, we admire them. But when they're willing to step back, I think we admire them even more. Like it builds trust because, so let me make this analogy to, I'm a mom of four kids and I've had four kids through, you know, the school systems. I sit just off at college now. And at first, I was always so grateful that certain parents were like always willing to do the hard jobs at school, like in the PTA. I'm a working mom. So like, I'd be like, oh man, thank goodness that person's stepping up and taking on the big job because I can't. And I was grateful that they stepped up. But then I started to notice like there are certain parents that always are in charge and they're in charge of every class thing and every school party. And I noticed like, some of those people there, I think they're in charge because they're like, they want things to work out for their kids. Mm. And I'm like, I'm a little suspicious of that leadership versus the people who are willing to say, okay, you know what? We need a teen parent for this. I will do that. But then they're and some willing to support other parents who step into those roles.
Okay.
And these are people who we trust. They build a lot of credibility because we like, you know what, you're leading as an act of service to the group as opposed to leading to serve your own interests.
That can be very evident sometimes. People, organizations can notice.
Oh, and in business organizations, it's so evident. Like, why do you always need to be in charge? Like, are you afraid of what would happen if you weren't in charge?
Mm.
Are you pushing your own agenda? Are you making a land grab? Like, we're a little suspicious. And I think we hold back following those leaders because we're like, I gotta assess what your intent is.
It's true. It's not easy to build trust when you see a selfish agenda on someone else.
One of the things I've been really privileged to be able to see is some really amazing leaders. I mentioned Scott Cook, the founder and CEO of former CEO of into it. And one of the things that is just amazing about this man is he's a great leader, but I've watched that he's also really good at sitting in the back of the room and being a participant and being a learner and how he supports other people. And you see this with the best leaders. They don't always have to be the boss.
It's admirable. Someone who is willing to let others be leaders as well. Mm-hmm. My last question, and I'm going to ask you from the perspective of a Latino and a member of a Latino community who's trying to thrive, who's trying to take their place of leadership also in the world and society, you know, and how should we cultivate an impact mindset among ourselves?
You asked a thoughtful question, and it's a multidimensional question. Mm-hmm. And so where do you start on that? I think it starts by assuming that you have more power than you might think in any given situation. And, you know, a lot of times we think, well, and particularly if we're someone that doesn't come from the dominant culture, mm-hmm. or the dominant power structure, whether that's based on your gender or your country of origin or race, ethnicity, whatever that might be, you think, well, I'm not the one in charge. Other people are in charge. Like, at minimum, we are in charge of ourselves. But in any given situation, I think we have far more power than we think. And sometimes we think we have to exercise our power with voices of dissent and aggressiveness. But I think we have power to shape those situations. Part of the research I did, in interviewing 170 managers, we asked all of those managers like a bonus question. And the bonus question was, tell us what people that you've led do that you absolutely hate. Like, what okay. really annoys you?
Okay.
People were like, oh, I don't really have anything. I'm like, oh, I believe you do. Turns out they do. And then we asked, what is it that people do that you absolutely love? And I want to share what's on the top of these lists. And I see these as credibility killers because these are things that really annoy and aggravate leaders. Top of the list of things that bosses hate, credibility killers, are one, give your boss problems without solutions. Mm. Number two, wait for your boss to tell you what to do. Mm. See, it turns out bosses don't really like being bossy. Number three, make your boss chase you down and remind you what to do. Mm. Okay, and bosses don't like to be micromanagers. Like most people who get pulled into this really resent having to nag and follow up. Okay, here's what bosses love the most.
Okay.
Top of the list is doing things without being asked. Number two, anticipating problems and having a plan to solve them. And number three, helping your teammates.
Okay.
None of these are like, so what's common in that set of the top three is like, I want people who are like mini managers. I want people who don't wait to be given permission or commissioned to do things. They're like, oh, I see a need. I'm going to just go solve a need. I see a problem. I'm not going to wait for my boss to figure out that this is a problem. I'm going to go in and solve it and be like, hey, by the way, I saw a conflict coming up and I just took the liberty of reconciling that. That problem's taken care of. Like, these are people we go, thank you.
Oh, yes.
Wow. And like the helping your teammates, it's this recognition that the boss can't be everywhere at any one time. And if everyone's depending on the boss, like we can't make fast enough progress. It's like, oh, I saw someone who was struggling. I jumped in and helped. And these are people we really appreciate that have a lot of influence. And I think they're examples that we don't need to wait to be asked. Certainly we don't need to wait to be told.
Yeah.
But my own experience added to what I found in all this research is that we don't need to be given permission. Like, people appreciate it when just say, like, I saw an opportunity to contribute, and so I took the liberty to. Now, when we act rogue, it's probably threatening. And, you know, by rogue, I mean we do things in isolation.
Okay.
But You know, operating rogue and just taking things into our own hands is like vigilante style.
Oh, okay.
Most bosses don't appreciate that. But saying, I saw this need, either I took care of it and now I'm telling you about it to give you a chance to say, you know what, actually, I don't want you helping that person, or like, that really isn't a problem. Like, can you roll that back? Okay, yeah, I'll change that back. Or, you know, if maybe you think that's even still too assertive, it might be as simple as saying, you know, I'm noticing this issue. I'm sensing a conflict that like, we're going to end up with like two meetings happening at the same time or too much going on at once that for the team to handle, like, would it be okay if I step in and reconcile this? You know, would it be okay if I joined that meeting because I think I could be helpful? It's like, we can get permission. But I think at any given time, people want us to play bigger than we ever thought they might want me.
And it's a matter of believing that and act like it.
If you, you know, if in doubt, check with someone.
Okay.
And if you think maybe you're, you know, operating, that you might do something that would annoy or set someone off, it's like, inform them, check with them first.
Wow, communication. That was Liz Wiseman, author of Impact Players, How to Take the Lead, Play Bigger, and Multiply Your Impact. Liz, thank you so much for being here. Needless to say, you're always welcome to come back.
Gonzalo, thank you so much for the conversation and for the invitation.
This was Gonzalo Peña, and this is Idea Tellers.